Vegas, Nevada, with Michael Cadeau, going out for potential 1 billion radios. That's many radios are out there. 1 billion. Of course, many of them we don't broadcast to, but that's how many. And we're going to podcast, too. You know that?
I did hear that.
We've had a lot of bootleg podcasts. I mean, on iTunes and stuff, we're lousy with our show on podcasts. But we're going to start doing it. CBS has now decided it's okay to do podcasts.
That's good.
They're opening up to the future.
Why not?
I think a lot of them are okay with microwaves now, too. You can have a microwave in CBS studios. And podcasts, they've opened that up. So I think on PennRadio.com, soon, probably not today, but soon, we're going to have a full podcast so people can just listen to us while they're jogging. Come on, you can do it. Go, go, go. Just a little bit of Richard
Simmons. Do a whole show like that.
And four more. And hands by your side. And then it's two more. And then it's hands by your head. And then it's one more. Yeah. Sweating to Ben Gillette. Yeah.
I do that every day.
I know. 866-313-FREE. 866-313-FREE. 3733. I'm going to take some calls today because I don't feel well. And the subjects we'll be talking about will be...
medicines?
Well, vomiting. We're going to talk about vomiting.
All right.
And cloning and healthy bacon. Those all go together.
Yes.
Cloning and healthy bacon. You know, once when I was very, very nauseated in San Francisco, I was very, very sick. And I lived in a small apartment there. We were doing a show called the Asparagus Valley Cultural Society, which played at the Phoenix Theater in San Francisco, which is now, I think, a Thai restaurant. But it's on Broadway down the street from Carol Doda's. Is Carol Doda's Condor Club still there?
As far as I know, it is.
With a little plaque about her breast. This is where this is for the first time we had plastic breasts.
The last time I walked by it, it was there.
Yeah, we were on that street.
Uh-huh.
And we did a show there. Yeah. We did a show there. This is way back in the 40s, and we did a show there, and I was really, really, really sick. And I had this small apartment on O'Farrell Street, right down the street from Mitchell Brothers, not coincidentally. And I was really sick, and while I was sick and unable to eat or keep anything down, Weir Krissimer, who was the third member of the Asparagus Valley Cultural Society, it was me, Teller, and Weir Krissimer. Weir Krissimer bought 5 pounds of bacon. And while I was sick in bed, nauseated, he cooked it all in my kitchen so that the smell of bacon was overwhelming. And if you know, when you're really nauseated, bacon is one of those smells that can send you over the top. It's one of the greatest smells in the world, but if you're really sick.
Unless.
And, you know, I have a vector now. You said to my wife earlier today that you were never, ever sick before you had kids, and now you're never well.
Yes.
Is that right?
That is
correct. There's this thing called a play date, which is exactly the same as smallpox blankets. You know, when you send your kid on a play date, it's like saying, why don't you go up to F Troop there and get us some smallpox blankets? She has a play date, and only with like 4 or 5 kids. But, you know, when kids play, one of the things they do is suck each other's noses. That's one of the things they do. And, you know, you don't get many of your diseases through your nose and mouth. It's mostly your eyes. So they'll lick each other's eyes. I mean, there's nothing. Little babies playing together is really the most. I mean, there are bathhouses in San Francisco in 1981. That practice much safer sex than a play date. It's just repulsive, and it's just made to mutate. I believe that my daughter and her friends during a play date are actually just working on a new kind of avian flu. So Moxie has a play date, she has a good time, and then she gets sick. And the bad thing about babies being sick, the good thing about it is they vomit, and then they smile because they don't know they're sick. But when they're feeling under the weather, you know, and while you're rushing out to get the Pedialyte popsicles, they look at you with this look that is the most heartbreaking look a human being can see, which is they look at you like, why aren't you helping me? Can't you tell I'm unhappy? Why don't you help me? So Moxie has been a little sick for the past couple of days. Not doctor sick, but just, you know, vomiting and stuff. And so I got sick yesterday. And I went to the show, and we have this. We've talked about this before, but it bears repeating because, you know, we're trying to do an hour a day. And that is the show must go on. Okay? So last night.
The show must go on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Stupidest rule ever made. The show must go on. If there's one thing that doesn't need to go on, it's a show. Last night, what, you know, 800 people, 1,000 people, whatever, come to see the Penn and Teller show. If I had just said, there had just been an announcement, ladies and gentlemen, Penn Jillette is sick. His part will be played tonight by Michael Goodell. If he had just said, you know, Penn Jillette is sick, why don't you all go home? The worst thing that happens, the horrible nightmare that happens, is that these people go out and probably have dinner together, maybe go back to the hotel a little earlier and screw. I mean, that is the nightmare. The nightmare is they don't get to see Penn and Teller catch a bullet in their teeth and do the show. It's a really good show. I'm proud of it. I love it. But compared to spending time with someone you love, no big deal. You know, a guy's got an escort. He's going to go out to have a show and then go home. He goes home a little earlier, you know. Parents talk to their kids. They can go to the video arcade and play something. Or they can gamble. Or they can go down the street, you know, and see another show. The show must go on. Why? The reason that cliche is so important is because you have to push it. You have to push it and say it and repeat it and believe it and have faith in it because it is so not true.
The vaccines must go on.
Yeah, exactly. Plumbers must go on, yes. Plumbing must go on. I mean, there's so many things. Well, see, this is a mine. This is an absolute gold mine of free association because there is not an occupation in the world that isn't more important than doing a show. Anything you come up with, electricians must go to work, you know, house painters must go to work, anything but the show must go on. And yet, in the thousands of shows I've done, probably 8,000 shows, I don't know if that's a real number, I made that up, but I mean certainly more than 1,000 and less than 10,000. All you need for the Nobel Prize is the number of zeros. In my world, pi is one. That's all you need, the number of zeros in your set. Rob Pike said that in my world, pi is one. I thought it was very witty, so I repeated it, stole it from him. So,
in Rob's world, it would seem like an accurate pi would be more helpful. Your world, pi is one. Rob.
No, but we were talking about, you know, for the Nobel Prize, all you need is a number of zeros.
I think the show Must Be Gone has clearly been spread. Must Be Gone. Sorry, that was a real good slip, wasn't it? The show Must Be Gone.
The show must go on is, it's like religion.
Showbiz people are just pushing it.
Yeah, well, the reason is because if the truth were seen, that right, shows didn't matter, you would cancel a show for anything. For anything. You know, it would be like, oh, I'm sweating a little.
Yeah, I'm
better
a little
cancel
peckish.
The show. Yeah, I'm a little hungry. Yeah, I'm a mite peckish. I feel like a hostess cupcake. I have time to get to the hostess. Can
yeah,
I get 7-Eleven?
The show.
No, I don't. Let's cancel the show tonight. What do you say? So promoters and producers gave this self-important thing of the show must go on. So last night I'm drinking Emmetrol backstage to not vomit on stage, which for some of our audience, you know, the Jim Rose overlap would be a big plus, but not for all of them. So I'm trying not to vomit. I can't even move around that much because it feels. And then I come back. This is what a pro I am. I go out. I take pictures with people. I hang out. I go backstage, take my mics off, take my suit off, and then go into the bathroom and retch. You know, I'm able to control it for that amount of time. And I have never missed a show. I've broken bones. You know, I've broken my foot. I've had really bad burns. I've been incredibly sick. I have gone directly from the hospital where I was on an IV. I've gone directly from the hospital on an IV in to do the show and then go back. But the important reason I do this, now, it's not because the show must go on. It's not because the show must go on, because that is obviously jive and doesn't matter. My feeling is the viruses must be spread. That's the important part. I'm going to go on stage, and I'm going to speak. And I speak loudly on stage, as you know. I tend to use my outdoor voice more than my indoor voice. I spit a lot.
You spit a lot during the show. I've seen it.
And it's also a lot of it gets vaporized and just goes into the whole air system. So a lot of people will be sick in Vegas tomorrow because of me. That's actually not true. You don't get many sicknesses. You have to really, it's eyes. I believe it's all eyes. I believe it's all, you shake hands and you touch your eyes. And when we go out to shake hands with people after the show, I wash my hands really well before, I wash my hands really well after, and then it's like I'm in surgery. You know, because Steve Martin, you know, and Howie Mandel and stuff won't shake hands. It's a disgusting half. Shaking hands is just so filthy because they touch their eyes and their hands and their mouths, and then they shake your hand, and then you touch your eyes, and it goes right in there. Just the way it goes. So what I do is it's like I'm going to surgery. Wash my hands real good. I scrub up. Shake hands with everybody without touching my face. Then I go backstage, and I scrub down really good after that. I had to, because when I did wash my hands really well after the show, I was sick all the time. But now I'm sick all the time. But now it's because of a baby that I love. Okay? So anybody wants to call
you,
in?
You know what I think? I think perhaps the virus, the chemicals released by the viruses, have produced the show must go on statement. Because they work in such complex ways.
Sure.
And through evolution, they may have actually discovered the chemical signal for the show must go on.
Of course. Yeah, that's it. Because, you know, there's all those viruses that make ants climb up to the top.
Yeah,
of
the parasites, yeah.
Parasites, they do all that. They make their little ant brains crazy. So why couldn't the flu just make you think, ooh, the show must go on?
Ampulex compressa. Seems like a normal wasp buzzing around its mate, but she finds a cockroach to make her eggs. The host proceeds to deliver two precise stings and causes the cockroach actually to crawl up to where other cockroaches will eat it. It'll fall apart and other cockroaches will eat it.
Wow, that's a good trick.
And they're controlling it like a dog on a leash, man. They just walk it around.
Yeah, I was reading about that. Wasps, you know, and anyone who believes in God, there's a one-word argument for it, which is wasps.
Ampulex compressa.
Yeah, but wasps in general. And I mean by wasps, I mean the insect that does these horrible, disgusting things, injecting its eggs into living beings. And I also mean white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. Both of those things are big arguments against God, I think.
So it doesn't seem like that much of a stretch that the virus is pushing. The show must go on.
So I get the flu, and then I have a few symptoms. And one of the symptoms is, in my mind, it clicks, I've got to go on stage.
I've got to go on stage.
Show must go on. Must infect others. Yeah, I know.
It's probably more subtle than that.
Yeah.
You probably just feel hungry and think, I better work so I make some money.
And that's all just trial and error. The guy in Afghanistan got off.
Yeah, they a mistrial?
Well,
what did they say?
It's more confusing than that. They think, I don't know how I would feel about this if I were a Christian. He was going to be put to death not for being a Christian. That's very important. He was going to be tried and put to death for abandoning Islam and going to Christianity. What's it called? Apostate or something?
Quitter. He's a quitter.
Quitter. And quitters never win, and quitters sometimes get killed by the Afghanistan government. What he said is his defense. Now, I don't know how I feel about this, you know, if I were a Christian. I am not, just in case you tuned in late. I am not a Christian. But if I were, the idea that this guy has changed from Islam to Christianity, and he's going to be put to death for that, but then they examine him and say, no, it's okay, because he's crazy. He can't help it. He's a nut. And one of the things that make him crazy is the fact that he hears voices.
Mm-hmm.
Open up the Bible. All those whack jobs hear voices. That's one of the things that you do when you pray. You pray, and then voices come back and tell you to do nutty things, like the show must go on. I believe that's Leviticus. That's Leviticus 14:23-28. The show must go on. I don't know why it takes four verses, but it does. It's actually in Aramaic. In Aramaic, it's not quite that
succinct.
Do you think Mel Gibson understood anything of Aramaic? He did his movie, his stupid movie, right?
The Passion of
the Christ. He did it all in Aramaic?
Yeah. Do you think he learned it? Do you think he checked? That's a funny question.
I think he had any idea. Or maybe the Aramaic scholars.
The Aramaic, that's the smell of Aramaic. Yes.
The Aramaic scholars that he hired just had the Christ character just saying over and over again, the guy in Lethal Weapon is a fag. The guy in Lethal Weapon is a fag. The guy in Lethal Weapon, he's a retard. He's a loser. Lethal Weapon, what a loser. How nutty is this guy? And he's on the cross. And Mel's going, This is the part where he says, forgive them, Father. They know not what they do. And he's saying in Aramaic, the guy in Lethal Weapon is a talentless loser. Talentless Australian, drunken, chain-smoking loser. Maybe he's saying
I spent hours in makeup for this.
Man, that is the comedy. Why aren't we Aramaic scholars? Wouldn't that be the greatest
thing
in the world?
They've all died laughing. There are none left in the world.
Because, you know, Mel Gibson hardly speaks English, right? So, he's not a smart man. I mean, I don't know him. Maybe he is. But he strikes me as not a smart man. And, I mean, isn't he like his father's a Holocaust denier? You know?
Yeah, I think so.
Which I guess doesn't mean anything. You're not responsible for the mistake.
Your dad being
father.
Insane.
Right. His father hears voices, you know?
Yeah.
You know, Mel Gibson's father won on, what was it, Jeopardy or something? And that's why they moved to Australia.
Is that how he got Mel? It was a prize on Jeopardy.
Who is the talentless man who does not know Aramaic? I've always thought if I were smarter, if I were a really smart guy, I would try to get myself on Jeopardy and know all the right questions.
Yeah, sure.
But not form them in a question form. Okay? So they would say, he was Murray Gell-Mann's partner and wrote a book, Surely You're Joking. What was that? Would be
yeah,
answer.
Sure.
And then he'd come to me and I'd go, Richard Feynman. And they go, state that as a question, please. And I go, Richard Feynman? And they go, no, state that as a question. Richard Feynman? The other guy would go, who is Richard Feynman? I go, damn! 186,000 miles per second. Beep! Speed of light! Ask that as a question, please. Speed of light? It needs to be phrased as a question. Speed of... What is the speed of light? Damn! And I was on a roll. I'm sure I'm going to get this. This mighty river dissects America in half. Mississippi, question please. Okay. That would be my fantasy.
I think you should do the questions in an interesting way. If you were the speed of light and you were traveling somewhere, how fast would you be going? You know, beep. If I were on the speed of light and I needed lunch, how far would it be to lunch? Just some crazy question. That would answer that question.
That would have that in there.
Yeah.
You'd be going... Or just a question that doesn't really work as a question, you know. Like, what is Thomas Jefferson? You know, instead of who? Where? Monticello, was it? Beep! You just say, when is Thomas Jefferson? Because, I mean, are they really rating you on the question?
How fast would Thomas Jefferson be going if he were traveling at the speed of light? That seems like the right question.
Yeah, yeah.
Just crazy question.
Or if you're not sure, you know, which answer it is, you'd say, like, what is either Nefertiti or Euphrates? That's it as the questions. We're going to be coming back. We'll maybe talk a little bit more about vomiting. We'll talk definitely about cloning and healthy bacon. 866-313-3733. PennRadio.com. PennRadio@gmail.com. Okay, let's do this. Did a little version of the pension thing. I don't know how Mike Jones will know. Mike Jones doesn't get up early enough to check it out, so Jones won't know. But there's the guitar version of the thing. A nice slow bluesy tempo.
It still sounds like the Playboy After Dark thing.
That's nice. We are nothing but Playboy After Dark all the time. Did you read that the guy who directed Soylent Green, Richard Fleischer?
Oh, yeah,
he directed a lot of movies. He also directed Soylent Green, and the family's decided against serving food at the wake. Soylent Green is people.
I would think you would go the other way. I would have gone the other way.
Just have a...
Fingers.
A
lady fingers.
Or just a lot of green...
Yeah,
soil and stuff.
Pellets, yeah.
Yeah, just pellets. Was that what Soylent Green was, pellets?
That was pellets.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it was a kind of, I see it as kind of a pate type.
Okay.
A terrin. Those are all the cooking terms I know. When I'm a little bit nauseated,
right, the idea
I want to talk about food. Let's talk about these pigs.
We didn't talk about the pigs yet.
We're not all mean airport security. No. I mean actual pigs. They are cloning pigs. That have omega-3 fatty acids. Not they are going to, like it's in the future. They got what, five pigs?
Yeah.
Five pigs.
More than that.
They have cloned that have omega-3 fatty acids. Now, omega-3 fatty acids, besides the fun it is to say fatty acid. Good, just say fatty acid.
Fatty acid.
It's fun, isn't it?
Fun.
Sure. Well, the omega-3 fatty acids are found in oily fish.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to be good for your heart and stuff. But no one likes to eat oily fish. I mean,
it's supposedly well documented to boost the brain development in children and prevent cardiovascular disease in adults.
Yeah,
this fatty is serious stuff, man. Good. And now you're going to get it in bacon.
Yeah. So you know, you'd be saying, you know, honey, I'm a little worried. I'm not eating right. I haven't eaten enough bacon lately. Can you imagine Elvis with his fatty acid bacon? Just big bowls of fatty acid bacon.
He'd still be alive.
He'd still be young Elvis. You know, Elvis at the hayride in 1956. There you'd be there with his fatty acids coursing through his veins. You know, I believe... for every drop of rain that falls, a flower grows. But on top of that, I also believe that the problem with cloning, the reason everybody comes out against cloning, is the Boys from Brazil. Remember that movie?
Yes.
Yeah, a nothing movie about them cloning Hitler. And I believe that people who are against cloning think that, okay, what cloning means is we make Hitler. There is nothing scary about clones. They live among us all the time. Every set of identical twins are clones. All you're doing with cloning is just skewing the birth dates. Nothing else. You have identical twins of different ages. That's all clones are. And genetic engineering is the greatest thing that ever happened. Genetic engineering is going to solve all our problems, all of them. All our food problems, you know, to be able to genetically engineer food is a great, great thing. And the idea of cloning pigs that would have omega-3 fatty acids. And the heartbreaker on this, remember Golden Rice?
Yes. Yes.
Norman Borlaug, whose birthday was Saturday. What was
Happy
he, right?
Birthday, Norman. He
92.
Was 92 years old on Saturday. Still is 92.
Norman Borlaug is, I think, perhaps the greatest man that ever lived. Norman Borlaug, and his biography is going to come out. And I think when his biography comes out, Norman's going to come on the show. Norman Borlaug. And the amazing thing is that people don't know this name. Norman Borlaug is at A&M, Texas A&M University, and Norman Borlaug is credited with saving, now listen to this, credited with saving 1 billion people. In the 60s, during the Green Revolution, he decided that he would go to, first of all, it was Mexico, right?
Yeah.
And then India.
India.
And then China.
Yeah.
And he would look at what they needed to help their food supplies. And he developed, with the people at A&M, he developed a form of rice and a form of wheat that grew in better conditions.
Right, less water.
Less water. And he gave 1 billion people food. So when you're trashing, you know, people in Texas, keep in mind 1 billion people, almost all of them of a different race than he. I mean, true good for the world. And one of the reasons Americans are so fat is that Norman Borlaug helped at A&M University making food so cheap and affordable. If you could go back in time 100 years, 200 years, and say to people, you know, one of the biggest problems in a couple hundred years is that the poor are going to be too fat. They would laugh their fatty acids off. They really would. They would just laugh forever. The fact that we have obesity is a problem of poor people is really great. And we're going to solve it by the same kind of stuff. But Norman Borlaug, and then Norman Borlaug and some other guys came up with golden rice, which was a putting, what is it, vitamin A?
B vitamins into rice.
That's what I said. putting B vitamins.
You're only off by one letter.
What difference does it make? Putting B vitamins into rice, so it's kind of a golden rice. And this was going to stop.
Much more healthful, yes.
Going to stop huge numbers of kids from being blind.
Yeah.
From a lack of vitamin B. And the European Council, because, you know, we love Europe, so did everything they could to block it. I think we're successful, right?
Yes, they were successful.
Yeah, successful in blocking it because we didn't want any genetic engineered food going around the world, that rice would be the end of the world. These are also the same reprobates who got people in Africa to turn down the genetically engineered corn.
Right.
Right.
They're sitting there at a table with sandwiches and voting on it. I don't think those people should have that kind of food. Their children can see, and yet they don't think the other people's children should have that option.
Yeah. And I think, let's give it a try. As long as people are starving, do anything you possibly can.
Well, genetically altered a banana to contain a cholera vaccine. You could plant this banana plant outside of your village and save everyone in your village from cholera.
Yeah.
And people are fighting it. People are fighting it. We don't want that banana. We'd rather have cholera, thanks.
We just want to go on record as the Pendulet Show with Michael Goudeau. We're totally in favor of genetic engineering. I think I even got some of those fish that glow in the dark.
Yeah, I saw those. Those were great.
Yeah, I had them here for a while. I don't have them here now. They have a short lifespan, but they had I had glow-in-the-dark fish, which are illegal in California, but I had them here in Nevada. I think you should be able to make poodles that light up. I think you should do whatever you want. And there's this feeling like, and I think it's all just bad science fiction movies. I don't think people are thinking about it. I think they just remember vaguely that in a science fiction movie, Soylent Green was people, and that therefore it's a bad thing. So
people think you're going to pour a vat out of Hitler, you know? If we cloned Hitler, we would have a baby. We wouldn't have Hitler.
Right.
He wouldn't have the mustache.
No.
He wouldn't speak German.
No.
It'd be a lot of differences.
Well, they point that out in The Boys from Brazil.
Do they?
Yeah. The Hitler guys are living in America and South America and everywhere. They're living all over. But they try to do they wanted to kind of, in the movie, The Boys from Brazil, they wanted to kind of straddle the nature-nurture thing. So they have like his, Hitler's father died when he was 13 or something?
Yeah.
Something like that. This is where we need Robbie Libben. Robbie Libben, he's our Hitler expert here. But they try to do all that stuff in The Boys from Brazil, too, because they're trying. And why would you want to make Hitler? I mean, why would anybody, even a Nazi, why do you want to make Hitler? I mean, it wasn't that particularly genetically cloned thing. If you're an American Nazi, isn't it the ideas you're interested in?
Yeah, I would think.
Yeah, I don't know. But okay, we've got vomiting, healthy bacon. As usual, all our really good shows contain Hitler. We got Hitler in there. Because any discussion of healthy bacon and fatty acid pigs, you gotta get to Hitler. What are you doing? He's making the breast gesture. You're making the breast gesture because you're thinking genetically engineer women to have fatty acid omega-3 in their breasts. Is that what you're going for? Good. That's Happy Jack's idea. You get right down to A&M University. You get to work on that, okay? You get to work on your genetically engineered breasts. He's saying, oh, you could go to a strip club and get cholera vaccine. Good. Good thinking, Jack. Want to take a phone call? We can take a phone call, can't we?
Sure.
I have
a Mike on line 5. We're going to try it. We've been having some screen problems, but we'll try Mike on line 5.
You there, Mike?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Very well, thank you. How are you, boss?
Pretty good. I got a question for you guys.
Okay.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Okay. Since you guys are familiar with Las Vegas, I live in Chicago, and I've always wanted to go to Las Vegas.
Okay.
And I am disabled, and I try to go online and check out all the hotels in Las Vegas, and none of them seem to mention that they are handicap-friendly.
Now, are you in a wheelchair?
No, I could walk a little bit, but mainly I use a scooter for any long-term, if I have to walk further than
As far as I know, every place in Vegas is scooter friendly. There are people that don't need scooters who are hauling their fat asses around on them all over Vegas. I mean, I think that everything is wheelchair accessible. When we were doing Sin City Spectacular, we had Alan, who was one of our writers, who was in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And I believe at the MGM, he had a suite right on the ground floor. So there was no stairs and no elevators. But I think that virtually everywhere in Vegas there are ramps, and I think they're very, very friendly. It's probably not mentioned because it's taken for granted. I think every place you want to go. We certainly have seats out, so you can park your wheelchair there, and you certainly can get from anywhere in the Rio to anywhere else in the Rio without encountering any stairs or any irritation.
Yeah.
I think you're going to be great. I think you're going to have a great time.
What would the best area to stay? They say stay in the Strip. That's the best place to stay. That other people
sure.
Stay.
That's
downtown.
That's really your only choice. You know, I would obviously push for the Rio,
Monte Carlo,
and Godot would push for the Monte Carlo. But that would just be rooting for our personal taste. Yeah, I think any place you want to go on the Strip will be terrific. It depends a lot on your budget. You know, if you've got all the money in the world, you're going to go to Wynn or Bellagio. If you've got less money, you're going to go to Excalibur and Circus. It's just deciding based on your budget. But you're going to do great. I mean, Vegas will be fine. We are very disabled friendly.
You know what I say? Hit Priceline.com and let them choose.
Yeah.
$50 a night. Show me where I'm staying, babies.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Thanks for calling, boss. We'll be back after this. 866-313-FREE. That's 3733. PennRadio@gmail.com. PNNRadio@gmail.com. Bossa. Miss Pendulette here, Bossa Nova, Pendulette fame with Michael Lindell, talking about, it doesn't matter what we're talking about, you can still call in 866-313-3733. I mean, we're talking about healthy bacon, vomiting, and cloning, and a guy calls in and asks us where the best place to stay in Vegas is if you're disabled.
Right.
And we take that call as always on subject.
Sure.
You know,
Why not? There was
no reprimanding of him going, "What are you, crazy? What's that got to do with pigs?" No.
We don't know how he became handicapped either, and perhaps...
Maybe that was Titus.
Maybe it was.
It was a horrible pig-running accident.
Exactly. Your wife says on Vegas.com there's a whole section on all Vegas hotels are handicapped accessible. So.
Oh, really? On Vegas.com?
Vegas.com, you can check that.
Yeah. Not any research off the top of our head. That may be, this is an important thing. Mark this podcast. This may be the time Penn and Godot were right. Maybe the only time. I want to take some calls.
Sure. Let's go to line five. We have Brent calling on line five.
Hey, Brent. This is Penn. How you doing, Brent? Okay, good. No, Brent. Are you there, Brent? You know, we should have, they should do some sort of mashup, take all our podcasts and edit them down so that all you have is the hours that I spent
going. The best of show.
Are you there? Are you there? Is New York, turn down your radio.
We did an hour-long show, just missed calls.
Hour? I think we could probably do three full shows of just calls that were dropped. Renee, are you there? Renee? Brent? Renee? You know, when I did, I used to do all the voiceovers for Comedy Central.
Yes.
And I did that for 8 years. I did every voice here at Comedy Central. Coming up on South Park, Kenny dies here at Comedy Central. I did that for years and years. And one of the engineers...
They probably taped that. They're going to run that for free now. They're not even going to pay you on that one.
The engineers that I worked with in New York City, I was living in New York at the time, they gathered up everything that I said, every expletive that I ejaculated when I was angry. They pulled it out and they put it all together, and they had, I think it was a 4.5 minute or 5 minute tape of me saying the exact same F word with different direct objects at the end of it, at different volumes, and with different kinds of disgust every time I had messed up a take. And it was a solid 5 minutes of nothing but that. And they did not repeat anything. It was just me saying that. You know, me, you, it, you know, anything possible as that direct dog.
You know, dropping the phone calls. And we're just glossing over it. It's the show must go on. We are exactly, it's all tied in.
Right, exactly.
It's part of our show topic
today. It's part
today.
Of what we do. With Renee, I kept interviewing her, even though she couldn't hear me. And New York, what was happening in New York was, in New York they have...
These goats.
The microphones in some of the studios.
I thought you were going to talk about the goats.
No, I'm going to talk about the goats. And the microphones are wired directly into the phone. So when they ran Renee's call, there were some people in another studio who thought they were alone who were discussing, like, where to have lunch.
With the goats.
With the goats. And Renee was hearing them better than she was hearing us. She was trying desperately to do an interview, even though she had no chance of hearing it. The show must go on. We just kept going no matter what. And that's exactly it. If I had an accurate view of the world and how important this radio show really is, Renee would have said, I'm having trouble hearing you, and I would have said, well, that's our show for today. And let him fill in with Led Zeppelin or something, huh?
Yeah, we should find out where they were going for lunch. We should have met them there.
We should make a deal with New York. The next time they drop a call, you know, and we can't understand them and hear them, we go instantly to classic rock. You know, it goes directly from, Brent, are you there? There's a lady who's sure all the glitters is gold. Goes right to that automatically. I once saw, you know David Allan Coe?
Yeah.
David Allan Coe was a crazy, for those of you who don't know, David Allan Coe is a crazy country western guy. He wrote Take This Job and Shove It. But he is insane. And of all the people we've had backstage in our dressing room, he was the craziest looking. Long beard down to his navel that's braided and dyed blue. You know, biker tattoos, tears tattooed, a Marilyn Monroe beauty mark tattooed on his face. And Teller and I went to see him at Gillies. In the 70s, with the Gillies in Texas.
I've been to Gillies.
Have you?
I have.
In Texas?
Yeah.
And David Allan Coe was playing. And David Allan Coe has this line in one of his songs. The verse goes, country DJs all think I'm an outlaw. They'd never come to see me in these dives where bikers stare at cowboys who are laughing at the hippies who are praying they'll get out of here alive. We were at Gillies, and it was cowboys and bikers, and then it was me and Teller. And at that time, I was going through my heavy industrial punk phase. So my head was shaved, and I was wearing a blue jumpsuit. And Teller was going through his Oscar Wilde phase. So his hair was kind of curly, and he was wearing like a velvet suit coat. And we were at Gillies to see David Allan Coe. And boy, talk about praying. I mean, we were atheists, but we were praying we'd get out alive. And I was hungry. And so I ordered milk. So I was drinking milk at Gillies with David Allan Coe and surrounded by bikers who were fighting in the bar because we were big David Allan Coe fans. And David Allan Coe did one of the hippest things I've ever seen. He was unhappy with the reaction of the audience. He felt that they weren't properly enthusiastic at the right time. So he did about 15 minutes of his songs, and then he just stopped dead, looked out of the audience, and said, and there's a lot of obscenity in here that I won't do, because why get beeped, and New York would screw that up, and the whole show would go away. Stairway to Heaven. And boy, Robert Plant is annoying. We just end that whole thing there. So I'm not going to do the expletives, but he did say, you people, we'll use the word people. Okay, for him, it was... It was a four-syllable word, but it meant people. You people don't deserve me. You people are a lousy audience. What you deserve is Eagles. Right? And then his bass player came forward to the microphone, and David Allan Coe went to the back of the stage and turned his back on the audience and just played rhythm guitar, and they did nothing but Eagles songs for 35 minutes. They did like Hotel California, I'm a running down the road, you know, and there's nothing worse. You can talk about, you know, the parasite worm that when you're swimming in certain rivers follows the stream of urine and goes up into your penis and eats you away from the inside. You can talk about the worms that come out of it, but nothing is as bad as Eagles. You know, really, it's maybe Fleetwood Mac. You know, I said when Clinton brought out "Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow," I said, and I was quoted. I quoted this in a paper. They quoted me. I said that if Clinton declared war on Canada and escalated to full nuclear, it would not be worse than him making that Fleetwood Mac song be played all the time. Fleetwood Mac, Doobie Brothers, and Eagles, three worst things in the world. So David Allan Coe has his bass player singing Eagles songs. And the audience just screamed, boo, for like 35 minutes. And threw glasses of beer and everything at the stage. And they kept playing Eagles songs. And it was a question of wills, you know. And David Allan Coe's band was strong-willed enough that the bikers and the cowboys and the outlaws who were there finally got sick of booing. And kind of made it clear to David that they would from then on be polite. And David came forward, said enough Eagles, and went into David Allan Coe songs. The crowd went wild, and he did a whole wonderful show. It's one of the greatest examples of crowd control I've ever seen in my life. And the problem with doing that is you have to be so crazy to get away with that. You know, you have to be willing to say, I'll have my bass player hit in the head with a glass of beer. Okay. You don't have to be very crazy to think it's okay to have your bass player get hit in the head with a glass of beer. But, you know, David Allan Coe was like Iggy Pop. You know, he'd go into the audience and fight people. It's just insane. And I've seen him like five times. And when we saw him in the 70s, you know, we were unknown and didn't know him. And since then, Penn and Teller have become a little better known. And so when we go to the shows now, you know, even though we are still inappropriate for the crowd, David Allan Coe introduces us. You know, here are my friends, Penn and Teller, and we stand up, and all these people who I don't think naturally like us just cheer for us. I shouldn't even say that, you know, that they don't naturally like us, because I have never had a reaction from a motorcycle enthusiast. That's their term. A motorcycle enthusiast or someone who looked like a cowboy that was anything less than pleasant. You know, I went to the rodeo, and I had that closed-minded thing that the rodeo people... Of course, now rodeo is a whole different thing, because I can't even look at a cowboy hat without thinking Brokeback Mountain. And I didn't even see Brokeback Mountain. But now, wearing a cowboy hat, to me, is like having a really bushy mustache and wearing a black leather motorcycle hat in 1978 in Greenwich Village. It's exactly that. But, I mean, before that, when I went to the rodeo, I thought they would be against me, but it turns out that rodeo cowboys really like Penn and Teller. So I don't want to act like the people that like David Allan Coe would like us. They were wonderful, they were kind, they were really pleasant, but David Allan Coe introducing us from the stage sure didn't hurt. It was a pretty great thing. We didn't get many calls. I was hoping someone would call and say, you're crazy with the cloning. I even tried to overstate the case. That's one of the tricks you use in radio, is you overstate what you believe so that people will call in and call you crazy, because some people find that entertaining. So I did say all cloning, all genetic engineering, all of that is good. Do it for any reason. And even left wide open whether you should be able to do it on people, whether you should be able to say, you know, my daughter Moxie, I want to put this genetically engineered stuff in her so she's 7 feet tall and can play basketball.
Close in the dark like a fish.
Close in the dark like a fish, yeah.
We did get a couple calls, but, you know, we had some phone call issues. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, yeah, we did try to take a call. That was a call on cloning, but New York had a little bit of trouble. We're going to move, just so you know. You don't care about this, but I'm going to tell you anyway, because that's part of my job. we're going to move all the phone stuff to Las Vegas. And I don't mean by that that people in New York City do not know how to use phones. I lived in New York City, and people called me from even other boroughs and had no problem whatsoever when I lived in Manhattan talking to me. But the particular New York studio that we're talking to seems to have a little trouble. This is Penn Jillette feeling a little under the weather. I'll probably be better tomorrow. Let's hope so. But anyway, the show must go on.